Welcome to Teacher Quit Talk. I'm Miss Redacted.
And I'm Mrs. Frazzled. Every week we explore the teacher exodus to find out what, if anything, could get these educators back in the classroom.
We've all had our moments where we thought, what the hell am I doing here? From burnout to bureaucracy to soul-sucking stressors and creative dead ends.
From recognizing when it was time to go to navigating feelings of guilt and regret afterwards, we're here to cut out the gaslighting and get real about what it means to leave teaching.
We've got insights from former teachers from all over the country who have seen it all. So get ready to be disturbed. Join us on Teacher Quit Talk to laugh through the pain of the U.S. education system. We'll see you there.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Prevail, seja desde neva programa pro político.
L'histoire, la sécurité nationale.
Crimen organizado, dinheiro sucio.
Global corrupção, da brotpo da democracia.
E agora?
ATP.
E maintenant?
Com ustedes, sua anfitriã.
Gregoria.
Greg Oliar, this is Prevail. Welcome to the program. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Therapy Online. A therapist can help you become a better problem solver. Get unstuck with BetterHelp. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/Greg. Start living a better life today. We've got a great show, not just a show, the season finale. Season 4 of the Prevail podcast, Gal Suburban is here. I'm going to be off for 3 weeks, so I'm giving you like 2 weeks of content here. This is like a double album with Gal Suburban. It's because of my stupid COVID brain where I'm looking at the clock and I'm trying to make it an hour. And we started talking at 11:30 and I landed the plane like right at the, you know, half past the hour. And then I realized it was 1:30 and not 12:30. So I lost an hour. I just lost track of time. And maybe it's COVID brain. And maybe it's just because it was a good conversation. We were having a good time. So we hit all kinds of topics that you're going to be interested in, that you're going to want to know what she thinks about. Because as we know, people that listen to the show and read her work on Twitter and elsewhere, the stuff she's paying attention to winds up being important later on. So very grateful to her for coming on and celebrating the end of the season. Not the end of the fuckery, unfortunately, but the end of the season. Couple of quick things. There was a little bit of an audio problem, I would say, with the recording. So it almost sounds like you're playing. It's like a record that you're playing. So I apologize for that. We did everything we could to try to fix it. It cannot be fixed. But you'll hopefully not hold it against me. Schedule-wise, I'm going to be off for 3 weeks. Season 5 of the Prevail podcast. Coming at you, February 17th. I think the new season. Yeah, season 5. Holy shit, we're in season 5 already. Crazy how the time flies. Again, I just want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for sticking with me and supporting me during what was a not very pleasant end of 2022 and kind of a very, very busy beginning of 2023. I'm trying to, you know, get the content out as much as I can. And I've just gotten a lot of support and notes and, you know, letters and emails from people. And I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody who subscribes to my Substack. The Substack subscriptions subsidize this podcast. They subsidize everything that I do and make me continue doing the work that I'm doing here. So if you want to support the show, that's the best way to do it. Sign up for the Substack, subscribe. I hope everybody had a great year in 2022. I hope everybody has an even better year in 2023. And I don't want to talk too much because, again, this is like a double album. It's like physical graffiti or something. It's the wall is what it is. It's the White Album with Gal Suburban. So I'm going to stop talking. We'll be right back with Gal Suburban.
Does Santa stand where runs the man, the Sunshine State dictator? Does Santa stand the caravan is coming to invade her? It is a small world after all. The migrants leave, says Chris Pashaw. Florida
Gator. Gal Suburban, welcome back.
Hey, how's it going? Happy 2023.
Yeah.
Hey, is that what year it is?
I think so. Okay. I think so. I haven't seen you in a while. How were your holidays?
Oh, they didn't feel like holidays. I don't think. Probably not for you either, but yeah.
Yeah. You have now, do you do the Christmas thing? Like the tree and the Santa and all that?
Yeah, we do. We do that. We're not really crafty or very good at it, but we did the elf on the shelf and everything for the kids.
Yeah. You have three kids. Are they happy on Christmas? Because when my kids were little, usually Christmas, there were tears at some point always, despite our best efforts. So is that the case? Did you pull it off? Were they happy on Christmas morning?
Yeah, they are slightly spoiled, I would say, in a very teachable way. So anytime like they want something new, they have to donate. They have to pick out something and fill up a box and donate it to somewhere.
Oh, so, that's nice. Okay,
so,
good.
Try and do that at least.
Okay. My kids want something. Usually we just get it for them. And then, so they have everything that they need. And then Christmas comes and we're like, we got to get you more shit now. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah. that happened here. We had to get like a giant Hot Wheels. I'll probably say it wrong and my son will be so mad at me, but it's like the Hot Wheels Ultimate Garage Airdrop something. That's a giant thing with a gorilla that knocks cars off of a, I don't know.
I don't even know how to begin visualizing that, but as long as it keeps them entertained, I think that's the main thing. Is we're trying to buy peace and quiet. That's really what it amounts to. We're gonna get up really early. You're gonna open this shit, and then we can just hang around for the rest of the day and not have a, and it would be okay.
I spent the whole day building like a dollhouse, so unfortunately, all the gadgets and gadgets are like they all have to be built and. Of course, they all want all of them built. They multitask.
Yeah. I think I'm done with that phase of things. I think the things that I buy now, they're old enough that they'll just take them and it'll be something that's already put together or a Lego set that they want to put together. So I don't have to, I don't have to do anything, which is always nice because
it's always a plus.
Yeah.
Especially on that day.
It is a holiday. It's a day of rest. We're supposed to just relax, And
right.
And we need relaxation. So I wanted to have you on. This is going to be the finale of season four, by the way. You're the finale.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. We bring out the heavy hitters for the finale.
Stop.
So there's lots of stuff going on. I've been a little bit out of the loop because of the COVID and other factors in my life. So I haven't been paying attention quite as assiduously as normal. So I wanted to have you on, and what I'd like to do at least at the beginning is get your take on a couple of big picture things. Just, we don't have to go into any great detail. Just I want to hit on a couple topics and see where your head's at with things. And then later on, we'll talk about some of the stuff that you've been doing research on and get updates on what's going on there and other stuff that you think that we should be paying attention to. Because as listeners of the podcast know, stuff that you think we should be paying attention to is stuff that we should be paying attention to. It has come to pass. There's a body of evidence now that this is something smart that we should be doing. So I want to start with the J6 committee. Which is, wound up and done, certain things. I
I'm of two minds about it. I think that it's great that it happened. I think Pelosi did a wonderful job managing it and getting everybody on the same page and putting Kinzinger and Cheney on there to make it bipartisan and all of this stuff. And I think that it did do the very essential basic job of, in a very remedial way, explaining to the American people that this thing happened, it was really bad, and Trump was responsible. Which is all good, especially since, you know, it's not necessarily their job to investigate crimes. But on the other hand, you know, lots of people that were involved in this thing were not mentioned at all. And my sense reading your tweets and is that you seemed a little bit disappointed by the conclusions and that it wound up so quickly. So what are you thinking now about it?
Yeah, I mean, I try and find a little bit of like silver lining when I think about it, because I know that they had time constraints and they had budgetary constraints. They may have put those on themselves, kind of just based off of like Denver Riggleman's kind of assessment after he left the committee. I know that he particularly wanted a larger budget for the, you know, the team that kind of he was heading up, which was like all the data. I mean, it just had tons and tons of text messages and social media and all that kind of stuff that really required a more robust analysis. And I think that's where a lot of information could have been found. I mean, it's, when I think about it, they had to go and they had to make Trump politically toxic.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people want to say that's, oh, it's Cheney's opponent. I'm not really not sure it was just Cheney. I think he really needed to be ousted in a way that was, you know, firm and clear. And I think in order to present such a story to the public, especially the public in an information war, you have to be really concise.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of reason why they can't really go on off into these nuances and explain what happened 30 years ago and what happened. They can't give you the history, and then they can't give you the lead up and the event. And the after, they just can't, they don't have the capability to do that, nor is, was that what they were tasked with. I think they missed the opportunity to at least introduce through, like, you know, having somebody like Ruth Ben Yat or Kristen Stewart or some, an expert in Christian nationalism testify at least to some of the symbolism we saw at the Capitol with the, you know, appeal to heaven flags and the, you know, the different prayers and the Jericho March and things that were really symbolic of a very dangerous, extremist Christian sect that was really in operation on that day. I think they missed an opportunity to intro that. But other than that, I think, you know, they did an okay job giving the basics. I wish that the Senate would have taken over, because I know that even the House thinks that they didn't have enough time and they needed to pump this stuff out. You know, part of what, you know, kind of ruined the Christmas time, because I'm sitting here like, oh shit, there's all these transcripts.
I know,
like,
I know.
Oh, family or transcripts, you know, like, oh, it's Giddy's transcript. Okay, guys, I got to go for an hour, you know, but like, you know, they had to push all this stuff out. So I do kind of wish that, even them acknowledging they didn't take it to completion in its entirety, that the Senate didn't pull it into them, you know, with Democrats in control there and continuing the investigation that I think they know needs to happen.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing. I didn't get to read any of the transcripts in any kind of like serious way, because I just haven't had time. I feel like, you know, here's, it's like reading assignments. Whenever this stuff comes to some conclusion, and we never know when, for me, it's always inconveniently timed. It's like the Mueller report came out when I was on a vacation down the shore, you know, I was supposed to go to the beach, and I'm like, fuck, I got to read this thing now, you know,
and it's huge.
Yeah,
right?
Like, mostly just scanning it to make sure I didn't fuck anything up in my own writing. And, you know, and I didn't. And this is even more because there's so many different characters and players, and there's things that came up in the transcripts, I think, that are interesting that don't necessarily have to do with the insurrection per se, but some of the side shit that was going on, you know, like one of the things about Kushner saying that he's not going to give the Biden people any COVID information during transition, which,
yes,
that guy is just a fucking ghoul. But, it, you know, that has nothing to do with,
yeah,
J6, but that's a that's a relevant piece of information as we're sitting on a million Americans dead. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that jerk.
No, he's a jerk. He comes up in Guineas also. But yeah, I mean, just applying any sort of like analysis when you know a lot of these different players that maybe aren't spoken of very much, when you're reading through some of these, I mean, don't get me wrong, I haven't read very much because I'm really meticulous in how I go through them, but you can... they're lying. Like you can take one transcript of somebody who was interacting with somebody else and they're telling a different story about the same text message or the same event or the same phone call or whatever. And so it's trying to figure out, you know, who should you compare between. I mean, I just think it's a long, long process. So anything that's coming out about these transcripts kind of requires a little bit of, I would say, pause to get the full, you know, network information, because a lot of them are lying, like straight up lying.
It's weird when you have an entire administration of liars that they would lie under oath. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So the second piece is Congress isn't responsible for executing the laws. The executive branch is, which means that whatever determinations they made, should we charge Trump? Should we not? Whatever. And they have recommended to the DOJ that, yes, they should. It falls at the feet of the Justice Department and Merrick Garland to do this stuff. And it looked like to me that the Justice Department hasn't really taken this on with the urgency that it seems to require, especially looking at what's happening in Brazil now when they managed to arrest all the people the day it happened. Which would have been easier than just posting pictures on Twitter 2 years after the fact. Do you know this asshole? I know that there's the whole legal Twitter, and half of them think that Garland is going by the book because he's blah, 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 blah. And then half of them think that he's a complete useless waste. And I usually just sort of toggle between those two extremes, like I'm playing Pong or something like that. And But he did, I think, sparked by whether Trump saying he's going to run for president, which to me is who gives a shit if he's running or not. He says this is the biggest criminal we've ever produced. Arrest him, dumbass. Or the fact that Congress, in the form of the J6 committee, recommended that he be charged. So he put this Jack Smith dude in and made him special counsel. You know, part of me is like, oh, yay, he's going to come and kick ass. And then, you know, 75% of me is like, OK, this is another waste of fucking time and another way to just kick the can down the road and hope everybody forgets. Yeah. So what's your take on Garland and the DOJ and all this stuff?
Oh, yeah, that's a it's big. I mean, I feel like I toggle between the two also, because I just fundamentally want to believe in justice, right? Yeah. Like, I just have this, like, you know, foundational understanding of if you do something wrong, there are consequences, right? I mean, I grew up with a dad who was a police officer. My mom was an attorney. So I just have had this kind of foundational belief. Sorry for my rooster. My foundational belief, you know, that rule of law and that you follow the laws. And that may have been, you know, simpler for me as like a white woman. And I understand that and I acknowledge that. And there are changes that clearly need to be made, but I still want to believe at the end of the day that it has kept us safer and more secure as a country. So I want to believe that it exists and that it's applied equally. Sorry, should I start?
Oh, I can barely hear the rooster. It's good.
Oh, thank goodness.
The rooster is just, he's just accentuating your points. He's giving emphasis.
Yes, I apologize. But yeah, and I think, you know, I've been disappointed kind of just in all reactions to all of it, right? Like, not that I think that, you know, I don't think that like in comparison to Brazil, it's maybe, I don't know enough about, oh man, do you need a rooster sound effect?
Don't worry about the rooster. I don't care about the rooster. Okay. Nobody listening cares about the rooster.
Right. Okay, sorry guys.
We like to add color to the broadcast, you know.
He'll be done. And he's very...
What's funny about the rooster is that there's two cute puppies laying behind you in a bed that I will start wake up at some point, I think. I don't know. That'll be the trigger to end the show, I guess.
I have a family farm here going on. Yeah. So, yeah, we're just living that COVID life, right? Everybody's collecting these weird animals. And now I have this damn rooster. Anyway, so I've been disappointed, I guess, in the reaction from kind of everyone and everything at this point, because I just feel like, you know, Jan 6 committee did a well enough job to show criminality and planning and execution of, you know, a coup. And I think people need to call it a coup, a fascist coup to install a fascist idiot. You know, media has been really disappointing. Democrats, I don't think, are fighting. I think that, you know, they're still kind of thinking they should go high and, you know, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things where with Jack Smith, I mean, he seems cool. He kind of seems like a badass superhero, right? I mean, he would likely have better time selling NFT cards than Donald Trump. with his, you know, badass, like, purple and beard and all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we have this, like, tendency to rely on, like, a superhero type character to defeat a villain. And so we don't necessarily, you know, put the right efforts in the right places to facilitate that superhero to, like, I don't know, maybe not have to, like, lift the car while he holds the building up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, putting it all on a certain person to handle it.
Yeah, it's like in the old Batman show that was on when I was a kid, Batman would always have to come in and do, you know, solve the crimes, and then it would cut to, like, the chief of Commissioner Gordon and the chief of police talking about, thank God for Batman. What would we do without Batman? Like, they can't even leave the room. You know, I don't think they were ever even out of the police headquarters. And it's like that kind of thing. The savior is always some white guy. It's usually an old white guy. It's usually an old Republican-leaning white guy. So Jack Smith at least isn't that old. He's like my age. So at least we got that, I suppose. I don't know. You know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So we'll see how when there's indictments, there'll be indictments. And until then, I don't know. I'm going to hope that there are and assume that there never will be. Now, speaking of indictments and special counsels, Garland, after waiting like a million fucking years to do Jack Smith, Biden has two documents at his house and does exactly the right thing, which you're supposed to do. And no, we have to have this new special counsel, to the point where I just was starting laughing. I was giddy about, you know, is the counsel really special? Like, how many special counsels can we have here? Is every third guy a special counsel? I'm reliably informed.
How many
specials
does it take to nullify special?
This is a Trumpy guy, a Trump appointee, a Federalist Society dude. I'm reliably informed that at Harvard, where he went undergrad, wore shorts and a t-shirt outside on the quad, even when it was very cold, even though he's from California, whatever that means. And I don't know. I'm just telling you, I'm just giving you my intel here. But the whole documents business sounds to me like, and I know a lot of people have thrown this around, like it's been leaked or planted that way. I think it's just, if you have these jobs, there's just a fuck ton of these documents. It's not like there's five, it's not like the Infinity Stones where there's five of them or seven or whatever. There's a lot of them. And sometimes, you know, they're there and they're not. And there's ways that you're supposed to manage it when that happens. And just because one or two or 10 stray documents are at your house, now they're like, documents are found at Biden's house. Of course there are. It's the fucking president. He's allowed to have documents at his house while he's the president. But like, maybe there's just a lot of these things around. And I don't know. Do you feel like they're trying to push this narrative now to kind of balance it out? Or do you think something nefarious is happening?
I hate to be like, I don't like to get like too conspiratorial, but of course, yeah, there's gonna, but
I'm the one asked the question. So,
you know, now that there's more and more and more coming out, I mean, it kind of seems just, you know, less like there is a conspiracy afoot. You know, initially when it first came out, I was like, God, this is really convenient timing for these people, you know? And I thought about how DHS and the Secret Service deleted their phones messages from January 6th, and how Biden has been uncomfortable and distrusting of the Secret Service for a long time, you know, and specifically like about the dog bite situation and all sorts of things where there was really kind of, you know, Trumpian people still there that, you know, he wasn't comfortable with. And so that obviously lends to, you know, that kind of, oh, is there a conspiracy afoot to provide, you know, comfort to Donald Trump or cover for him? But, you know, as more documents come out, it's hard, you know, it's hard to really, you can't really go that far, I don't think, at that point when, you know, they're at a couple of different places and things like that. But I've also, from other experts, I've listened to a lot of people and read a lot of, you know, people who know a lot more than me. And I've seen a lot where they, there's been complaints, I think, bipartisan about the classification of documents, like after, you know, whatever it might be, if a conflict is over or something has happened, like there needs to be a process that allows more transparency to the public. And so there's a lot of times where documents really shouldn't be in those classification statuses anymore, but still are. And so they're not as sensitive as they once were when they were originally classified that way, but now they're, you know, maybe they should have been declassified at some point, or, and so I don't really know how to assess that, you know.
I just hope it's not a situation where, you know, they're going to use, I mean, they are going to use it no matter what, but to kind of do the whataboutism Kremlin playbook bullshit that he does when he does those things, which is annoying. I have a couple more things I want to ask before we get into the bread and butter, but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Gal Suburban.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp Therapy Online. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/Greg. Start living a better life today. Now, unfortunately, life doesn't come with a user manual. It would be great, right, if you knew what to do in every situation that you ever encountered. Life is complicated. Stuff's tricky. You never know really what's going to work and what's not. So when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and learn productive coping skills, which makes therapy the closest thing to a guided tour of the complex engine called you. BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient, secure, and accessible anywhere. I mean, anywhere you have, you know, online. As you know, I've used this. I've recommended it to my friends. I've recommended it to listeners privately apart from the ad. I think it's really great. I think therapy, especially now in this day and age with all the crazy stuff happening, is absolutely essential. You know, if you're on the fence about it, please do it. Just, you know, try BetterHelp and sort yourself out. Now, everyone deserves to feel their best. BetterHelp makes it easier to get started. As the world's largest therapy service, the largest, they've matched millions of people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. All the benefits of in-person therapy, plus it's more convenient, more accessible, and more affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. Things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. Couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. And as I've said before on the pod, what's important to me is you find somebody really pretty quickly, which if you're in crisis enough that you want to find a therapist, you don't want to take a month and a half to do it. So that's, to me, wonderful. So yeah, get unstuck with BetterHelp. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Greg. That's betterhelp.com/Greg. Start living a better life today.
Okay, we're back with Gal Suburban. We've moved away from the rooster. Does the rooster have a name?
Asshole right now. You know, my kids named him Smokey because he's like gray and black and white or something.
Okay.
So
that's okay. Smokey making his presence felt. I honestly, I could barely hear the rooster at all. Yeah, I.
Oh, thank goodness. I can definitely hear it and it's quite loud.
Yeah. Speaking of roosters.
Yes.
You know, parading around, strutting around the hen houses. Kevin McCarthy is now the speaker after 15 tries. And I don't know. I'm not comfortable with this traitor being second in line to the presidency. I'm not comfortable with Matt Gaetz, your buddy down there, having so much power, or Marjorie Taylor Greene having so much power. But what's your thought about McCarthy? Do you think it's going to be okay and they're just going to implode because they can't do anything? Or is there something really we should be afraid of here?
Yeah, I mean, I just think normalizing this behavior at all is dangerous, whether they accomplish anything through it or not. I just think the process of platforming and giving so much airtime to people who, you know, have no loyalty to the country or to the rule of law or democracy or, you know, anything important besides themselves and their own, you know, personal aspirations, like, is dangerous. Whether any of their bills get through or not really isn't, I think, the real danger. The real danger is the disinformation, the information war, the radicalization that they're accomplishing, and just normalizing this kind of polarized rhetoric and political violence. I think is the most dangerous part of them.
Yeah, it looked bad.
Yeah, Kevin McCarthy is just a pussy. I mean, like, I'm just going to say it. Yeah. Like, it's just what he, I mean, he's just a coward. He's weak. And I mean, I just, how pathetic must you be, you know, to just bow to all of these people? I don't get it. Like, maybe I just have more, I don't know,
self-esteem
than that.
I feel like with some of these guys, they're incapable of being shamed. And we know this, but that also means they're incapable of being humiliated. Like, you know, you take someone like a Ted Cruz. I mean, he legitimately seems to get off on being humiliated publicly to the point that I not even being like, that's not even a metaphor. It's like, what's wrong with you that you're constantly doing this all the time? And I don't think that any of this shit bothers Kevin McCarthy at all. The fact that he's a complete laughingstock and we all know this is a joke. It's like, you know, he'll go in there, lie, pretend he has some big sweeping mandate. And isn't it great that I'm the speaker? Is it? I mean, you know. The last great Republican speaker was a serial pedophile. So I don't know. Is it great that you're a GOP speaker of the House? I don't know, Kevin McCarthy. I just think...
Well, there has to be like a circle around these people who encourage and enable them. I mean, you know, like, so obviously someone is telling them, oh, don't listen to all those people. Like, you're wonderful. But, you know, I think even doing that, a lot of times some of those people are obviously disingenuous. And they're using people like, you know, Ted Cruz and people and Marjorie Taylor Greene who are willing or at least can acknowledge they are completely hypocritical and being exploited for their idiocy, right? But they're using them as weapons to damage the democratic process. So whether they know it or not, you know, somebody is in their ear telling them they're fucking special.
Yeah.
Obviously.
No, it's true. And, I mean, and you know, and for all we know, I mean, they may just never have been working for this country, in which case they're, you know, the people telling them that or there are their handlers. I don't know, because I don't know. I mean, at a certain point, when everything you do is actively weakening the country and fucking over as many Americans as possible, you have to ask the question, like, who are you really working for? Like, what's your deal? You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, that... as McCarthy said of Rohrabacher, that he's being paid or anything. But ultimately, if you're carrying water for the Kremlin, whether you're getting paid or whether you know it or not, you're still carrying water for the fucking Kremlin. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I feel like now there's this stuff is with the Ukraine war, with the invasion, everything is so easy to see because Putin is now so clearly bad that he's irredeemable. You cannot justify anything that he's done. So to stay with him, and even try to trumpet the Kremlin talking points at this point is just, you know, it's a slap in the face of democracies everywhere. And this guy's clearly the enemy. And I don't know, makes me mad.
Yeah, oh, me too, for sure. My husband went over there, I think. I don't know if we talked about that before. My husband was deployed like on 3 or 4 days notice to assist NATO right before the invasion, you know? So I think from like a military family's perspective, it's a slap in the face to my husband and his patriotism and his dedication to the country and mine. And, you know, for these guys to be out here saying America first, and we should fund them and they're you know, Nazis and love. I mean, just so many lies and all this shit. And I just feel like, God, for, you know, the party that pretends, you know, has co-opted this word patriot, they sure don't have a clue what it actually means. You know, they've done nothing but make our military less ready. They've destroyed our readiness through their anti-vaccine campaigns and their bullshit about the RT and wokeness military. Yeah. What the fuck is that word? Stop with that. I can't stand that word. I hate that word. I want everybody to stop using that stupid word. It's so stupid. But, you know, just when you're disgracing General Milley and our military leadership, like, what do you think that's doing to the morale of the troops? Like, and the people that, if your arch nemesis China decides to come and hurt America, what the fuck do you think is going to happen when you have weakened our military to a posture that cannot compete? Like, because you have told them the vaccines are going to make them, quote, die suddenly, that stupid movie, right? Yeah. And so it's just all these things. And then, you know, they got a win there. They got it so that the COVID-19 vaccine is not mandatory. And I just, why did we cave to that? This is, do you know how many vaccines these guys take? You gotta be kidding me. And here's the thing, if they want to deploy, if the other country requires a COVID-19 vaccine, they have to fucking get it. So we're talking about the people who aren't going over there, you know, deploying, you know, that really would be spared not to have this vaccine. I mean, this is how much they've done and to the, you know, our military power and strength, and it only feeds right into Putin and Xi, like to their other, you know, their apparent true arch nemesis, you know?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It's frustrating.
They're also, you know, McCarthy floated out a massive decrease in the defense budget, which to me, I know a lot of people like to say, like, it's kind of a Bernie Sanders dumbass oversimplification of a complex issue. Why are we defending money on defense and education should be spent more? We take money out of the defense. And da, da, da. That was a great idea when I was like 25, or I guess I was 27 when Ralph Nader was talking about it, when I was young and stupid and didn't understand how this shit works. But like, the defense budget doesn't just mean like guns and shit. It's lots and lots of different things. It's research and development. It's things that come out of the Defense Department, like, I don't know, the fucking yeah. internet and, you know, things that are, you know, game changing, world changing technologies and all this kind of stuff. And not for nothing, we spend the most on defense. And there's been a Pax Americana since 1945 for the most part. So maybe spending a lot of money on defense is actually a good thing. If you look at it statistically, not to mention the fact that lots of industries are tied into it. It's good for the economy. It's good for people that want to join the military that don't have other things that they can do, that, you know, the military is an opportunity for people that might not have other opportunities. There's lots of stuff that stems out of the defense spending. So it's to cut that off or to claim to is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's veterans benefits too.
Yeah. So well, for the people, they don't care about that.
You know,
they don't care of about course, that. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they've done a number to recruiting too. Like when you talk about these opportunities for lower income or, you know, socioeconomically, you know, kind of challenged people who would like to go to college or get out of a small town, like the MAGA Republicans have disgraced the idea of joining the military. And then they use the talking point that we can't recruit anybody for the military, you know, and it's so it's very sad and it's very obvious what they're at least trying to do from an outsider's perspective, and just weaken our position and our, you know, our ability to defend ourselves. So I don't know if they know something we don't, but
no, they're working for Putin. They're doing Putin's bidding. They're making things easier for Russia and harder for Ukraine by that. To me, that's the right now. It's such an easy litmus test. You know, what are you doing to help Ukraine? What are you doing? Or are you helping Russia and how? And that's it. This is as stark a good versus evil battle as we're going to get in our lifetime.
Right.
You know, and if you're on the wrong side, you're on the wrong fucking side. As for the woke military thing, woke is really just code for they don't like gay people, as I see it, or trans people. And, you know, look at the history of the military. Alexander the Great, you know, not, you know, straight. And Frederick the Great, same thing. Those are two of the three greatest generals that ever fucking lived. So come on, guys, do your research before you start bashing the gay people in the military. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Speaking of complete contemptible assholes, this is the last big picture thing. So I had Moscow Never Sleeps on a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about DeSantis.
I listened.
He's in Florida. Yeah. And said, you know, he checks all the boxes. He's a governor. He's got the party machine there wrapped up. He has funding. He's got this, that, and the other. I don't think he's wrong. I mean, he knows the state better than I do, and I'm sure he's going to come out of there. But is that enough to make somebody that disgustingly unlikable president? Is that in the Murdoch money? I don't know. What are you thinking about DeSantis at this point?
DeSantis is, he's so dangerous. I mean, that's just initial reaction. But I listened to your interview with Moscow Never Sleeps, and he mentioned specifically his control over the state legislature. Mm-hmm. And that was something that really resonated and stuck out to me, because it's very true. Just the ability and the way he can kind of just manipulate the state to create this like authoritarian stronghold over the people here through the legislature, who will just do anything. I guess I kind of wonder if DeSantis would want to leave such a strong position, you know, like, or if he, I mean, there's so many people moving to Florida. You know, you have like, you know, Rumble, and they're trying to recruit Twitter to put its headquarters in Florida. It's like they're kind of wanting to create this like little Venezuela or something, yeah, like their own, you know. I almost think like, well, maybe he'd rather secede and be his own little, you know, federation of DeSantis fuckwads or something, you know, rather than having to compete on a national stage, because he's not great in debates. He's a fucking asshole. People don't like him. Probably as much or more than they don't like Ted Cruz. He's very Ted Cruz-like. I mean, his wife runs the show. He has no emotive capability. He can't make eye contact with people. He's just not as charismatic and as, you know, quick on his feet, I think, to compete on a national stage. But that's not to say that he won't try, and there won't be a bunch of fucking idiots who are like, oh yeah, freedom, you know, and like, you know, and Guinea Thomas running around like, hey, everybody come to my groundswell meeting. Let's all like strategize, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've been able to push unlikable, distasteful people through before. So I can't underestimate the opportunity.
Yeah. That's interesting about his own fiefdom. It's like a college coach at a really good college program that is reluctant to try the NFL. You know, if you're the coach of Alabama, why would you leave to go coach the, you know, some shit professional team? But I call it DeSantistan, you know, like I'm not going to go to Florida. Like, you know, there's a coin show in Florida. I'm like, I'm not going there. I'm not going to put money in the economy, and I'm afraid that I'm going to get sick when I'm down there because of, you know, all of the complete public health ignorance of all this kind of stuff. And I think the main thing that saved Florida from the numbers initially in the first surge of pandemic, just that it's warm, so more people could be outside. You know, if it was colder there, the numbers would be a lot worse, I think.
Well, and he also told medical examiners to stop recording deaths that were attributed to COVID. So that helps.
Yeah. Cheating helps too. Yeah.
When in doubt. Cheating always helps. Yeah. When in doubt, erase the numbers.
Goose the numbers. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to be interested to see what happens. And I'm also interested to see what happens if any of this fuckery going on down there, which we've talked about on the pod before with Matt Gaetz, with Joel Greenberg, with now with Keith Ingersoll, and there's all this overlap of these very horrible people who are in various stages of conviction, indictment, incarceration, or just under investigation. In the case of, you know, vintage 99 Matt Gaetz with his Venmo.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that some of the stink comes off on DeSantis, but I don't know. I don't know if it's going to. I don't know if people care. I don't know if the crimes are too what's the word I'm looking for? Hard to explain, you know, they're too
complicated. Well, conspiracies are usually pretty, you know, webby, like there's, you know, different threads that lead to different, you know, pieces. But Greenberg was sentenced at the beginning of December for 11 years in prison. When he was being sentenced, the judge basically said that Greenberg, he wanted to give Greenberg more time just for the, you know, the heinous kind of nature and, you know, his betraying the public's trust as a, you know, public official and the, you know, the sex crimes, obviously. But those were the sex crimes part. He made an interesting comment, which I think may help Gates, unfortunately. But he also said that in his, you know, 22 years in this profession, that Greenberg had provided the most significant assistance that he'd ever seen.
Wow.
So okay. That he wanted to give him more than 11 years, but because of that, he gave him the 11. But he also said that what Greenberg did to his opponent, Brian Butte, who I've fortunately had the opportunity to become friends with over the last couple of years. Incredible, incredible guy. Totally ideologically different. Very different people. And him and I can have these really robust, mature conversations about what's going on. And so he's a great person. And he was totally destroyed. And the judge even said, like, what you did to him and his family is just egregious. Like, I've never in my life, you know, he accused him of raping students at the school he was a teacher at. And, you know, it was just awful, awful stuff. But, you know, Greenberg's attorney, Fritz Scheller, you could tell toward right before the judge was supposed to, you know, give the sentencing that he was very frustrated with the Department of Justice, with the state attorneys, with just the kind of law enforcement in general that were investigating this, because he's sitting here like, why the fuck is my client the one that is like taking the fall for all of these people?
Yeah.
Like, you need to start having courage to prosecute the crimes that we have clearly provided you the evidence, the clear, convincing evidence. It's not circumstantial. Like, we have given you what you needed. It's time for you to like have the courage to enforce the laws that you enforced against my client. He said that he had provided for multiple, four or five, I think, other men politically, a political status with sex crimes evidence. So, and we haven't really seen much else from that. So it's tough. It's tough to watch this and know that there are these guys out here that can wield power and authority like that. And a lot of that has to do with who DeSantis has appointed in certain positions to protect himself, to protect some of the state political apparatus, you know, the operatives and even the legislature there, you know, like Jason Broder, who had a fake candidate, you know, all these kinds of things. It's really, it's a really defeating thought to feel like, okay, do we have any recourse as American citizens when there is this wrongdoing and the system or agency in place that is supposed to protect us from having crime, you know, done against us, fail? What is our recourse when we can't elect them out of here? You know, like voting isn't, it can't be everything. Clearly, there has to be checks and ways to bring these people to justice.
Yeah,
that's the frustrating part watching it.
It is frustrating, and it's frustrating. I think this is a longstanding thing, just culturally, societally, is how little people in general in the media in the thing seem to give a shit when it's a sex crime against women. You know, Trump, we knew Trump was credibly accused of rape and sexual assault like dozens of times before he became president.
Right.
And it just never stuck. It's like people just didn't give a shit. They were like, oh, it's locker room talk and that's it. And this, you know, I haven't looked into this obviously nearly as much as you have, but some of the interplay between Gates and Greenberg talking about these girls and their girls is just disgusting and vile and wrong and illegal. Just, it is illegal.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to protect the vulnerable people that need to be protected, who, you know, what's the fucking point? Like, You know, even the Epstein business with the girls that he was getting from, what is it, West Palm, who at the high school there that he's
those are people
that the law is supposed to protect ultimately. And if they're not going to protect those people from monsters like this who are themselves in positions of power such that they enjoy protection. I mean, Matt Gaetz operates, he operates like some prince in like medieval times who thinks he has droit de seigneur and is going to burst into the bridal suite without any repercussions at all.
He is political royalty.
Yeah, but
in Florida,
it's like, it's not even just a term. I'm old enough to remember when he burst into the skiff, you know, to have his little pizza party. They should have fucking taken him out. I mean, at least you can't go in there. Everyone's just like,
he also intimidated and threatened Michael Cohen.
Yeah. That's right.
Before he testified, you know, but, you know, as far as, so this is the one thing the judge said that I think may find its way if ever Gaetz is charged for this one particular 17-year-old. The judge in Greenberg's sentencing said, well, you know, I don't believe that Joel Greenberg is a pedophile. And now I will defend this, and I know that people might get a little frustrated, but he was not actively seeking out young children.
Right.
Like
yeah.
the website that he was going to, they were supposed to have verified age of 18 and over. The girl went on there anyway. I still think it's important to acknowledge that they realized how old she was and continued.
Right.
So that I think is important, right? But the judge essentially said, I don't think, you know, he's necessarily a pedophile, that the girl was almost 18 and that she was essentially a prostitute. You know, that is so helpful for Matt Gaetz, right?
Yeah.
And it's really disturbing too, because I think people miss the element of, okay, there is an age of consent and it's statutory rape, all of those things. But there's also a power in a position of authority of somebody who has that kind of leverage over you, like whether it's Matt or Joel with, do you know who my dad is? Or, you know, I'm an elected official. Like those things are weapons that are wielded against young women who are either just exploring themselves or want to be out there in the world and have a good time or whatever. And maybe they are uncomfortable and they don't want to be having sex with these guys anymore and they want to go away, but those guys are going to threaten them and make them feel afraid to speak out if they feel like they were manipulated or wronged in some way or given drugs and forced to do sexual things that they were not necessarily of sound mind to make those choices. So I think part of the conversation has to be about these positions of power that, you know, kind of push down on women to say, well, you're going to do what I want because I have more power than you and nobody's going to believe you anyway. You know, so it just sucks that the judge said that out loud.
But, yeah, that's disappointing.
You know, it doesn't really help.
These are guys who this stuff I don't think should be difficult for people, just general public people to understand. Like those are things that if you're watching a show or a movie and the guys say shit like that, you know, watching it, oh, we're supposed to hate this guy and think he's bad. You know,
right?
So it's not. That's what I mean about the skiff thing with Matt Gaetz. Like some of this stuff is esoteric and kind of, you know, is it, you know, FARA laws or stuff like that. That's you know, there's a line. Where does the line drawn? You're not allowed to be in the skiff, and you went in the skiff. That's it. Once you set foot in there, they should beat you up until you leave. I think. Otherwise, what's the point of having it? You know, I don't care who
they should have put him in the jail underneath the house.
I don't know why they didn't. That was a huge mistake. And, you know, it's disgusting. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about something less awful.
Yeah. We washed that off.
you were talking about this. There's this thing called Organic Fresh Coin, which is a cryptocurrency cooked up in some part by people you talked about during our the Creatures of the Florida Swamp episode of this podcast. Keith Ingersoll is one. This guy, Mikhail Margolis, is another. And this crypto, I guess, was sponsored by Belarus, which,
Yeah.
Which makes, first of all, it makes no sense because I thought crypto wasn't supposed to be state sponsored by any state. And that was the whole point of crypto, that it, you know, no state was going to tell it what to do.
Decentralized.
Also, yeah. Why would having the, you know, the imprimatur of Belarus matter? Like, I deal in coins and banknotes, and we have pallets of this shitty Belarusian money because it's worth nothing. Nothing. It's so it's not exactly a government whose support I would go and, you know, seek the endorsement of. So what's going on with these guys?
Yeah. Or tout it. Yeah. Like, oh, hey, we're back to it. So, you know, it's good. Mm-hmm. You know, like 60% of the time. yeah. So I've had this, I found this like almost 2 years ago, I guess now, with Keith Ingersoll and Mikhail Margulis and this woman, Yulia Konstantinova, Russian, who came through pageants, you know, the Miss USA and all of that kind of stuff in Florida. Yeah. Yeah. So she was on that, this company that was registered in Florida with Keith. And now, mind you, he received a contract from Joel Greenberg's office as a real estate advisor. So just to like give you that quick background on why he matters. But yeah, I eventually, Brian Butte, who's Greenberg's political victim, he was in touch with a couple of guys, Mike Spencer and Bennett Tomlinson, and they are kind of crypto experts and analysts that look at corruption and things in crypto coin offerings and things. So they really took a really good look at it, and they helped explain it to me where being backed by, you know, a country like Belarus would allow potentially for the CEOs or CFOs to actually have bank accounts in that nation. So what happens is it's a way to essentially clean money through crypto and pull cash out in some sort of way or something. I mean, I'm not the expert in that, but Bennett has some really good breakdowns of it. And they've written a couple of articles just because it really is a significant story that, you know, I mean, there could be January 6th money that went through there, you know, things like this, because Keith Ingersoll was indicted on 41 charges of money laundering and wire fraud in November of 2021 with James Adamczak. And Adamczak died not too long ago. He had cancer. But 3 days after, I think it was 2 or 3 days after Keith Ingersoll and Adamczak were indicted on these 41 money laundering and wire fraud charges, Mikhail Margulis, his business partner who connected him with the Belarusian Lukashenko, died. And he wrote his own eulogy the day before, which is like, oh, well, that's great foreshadowing. Mm. You know, like, I'm going to die tomorrow. You will be so sad for me. You know, and this guy, Mikhail Margulis, was already under FBI investigation for his association with, it was like the Russian, I think it's KORS. I can't remember what it stands for, but Maria Butina's friend was part of it. Her first interview after her apartment was raided by the FBI was with Maria Butina on RT.
Okay.
And he was part of this organization that was raided by the FBI, you know. And so Mikhail Margulis is such an important player in the 2016 election. He actually said that he brought material to Congress about Burisma and Ukraine. He was in Ukraine just not too long before he died. He's just a fucking, he's a spy. I mean, he's a Russian. I mean, it's like, there's no other way to, he's dead now. He's a dead spy.
Yeah.
But, you know, and he was in business with this guy, Keith Ingersoll, this random kind of political financier who is close with, you know, Paula White. And, you know, some of these evangelicals,
does she
live
in Florida?
Trump circle.
Is she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Paula White, Paula White, for those unfamiliar, is the Trump's spiritual advisor, the blonde lady who says the kooky stuff, and the wife of Jonathan Cain from Journey, disappointingly.
Yeah, but apparently she stole their money out of their bank account, I heard.
I heard that.
I'm not surprised.
Her money and Journey's money went their separate ways. That's it. That's all you need.
Yeah. Well, so Bennett explains it. Basically, the crypto coin offering was what ended up rolling through it was approximately $12.9 million. Well, what Adam Zak and Ingersoll were indicted for was bilking an investor out of approximately $12.9 million. And they were, when they were indicted, it was for approximately $12.4 million. So they stole money from an investor and they laundered it. And it doesn't really say in the indictment how they laundered it.
Okay.
And I would assume the amounts seem coincidentally consistent. There's the puppy. You know.
So wait.
My farm. Yeah. Go ahead.
The 12.4 billion and then 12.4 billion. What do you mean by the?
I said a million. I'm sorry.
A million, so sorry. Million. 12.4 million, yeah. 12.4 million. The consistency of the numbers. What do you mean by that? What does that suggest?
Okay. So they convinced a real estate investor that they had properties that they actually didn't own. They had fake documents. Okay. So the investor thought that they were putting money in escrow for these properties when they weren't. And so what was happening is Adam Zak and Ingersoll were taking that money and taking it for themselves, but they would obviously, they've stolen it. So it's dirty money at that point, mm-hmm. right? So they would have to clean that money some way. So in my judgment, which means whatever to whoever, is that they washed that money through that crypto coin, because that coin that they offered to the public, it was only ever, however it works. I'm so sorry. I'm not good at crypto stuff. I think it's fucking dumb. You know, it was only in two crypto wallets. And it was a total amount that was used up of these coins. So used up, meaning, I guess, they mine for it or something fucking stupid. Sounds like a video game to me. And they mine for it and then they have it and then they can kind of convert that into cash somehow through an exchange or whatever. Yeah. So when they stole that money, it's dirty money. But if they have a coin that they can purchase the Bitcoins and then they can exchange those Bitcoins for cash, it washes through that coin and comes out clean on the other side. And it just so happens that that coin was just about the same amount of money they stole from the real estate investor that they were indicted for.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I probably didn't explain
that. No, you did. I get it. I get it now. I just wasn't sure what the two balances was. The whole crypto thing to me is just, it's essentially, as I see it, it's just a way to launder money, as Moscow Never Sleeps said, without real estate. You know, it's a way to launder money with just some dumb shit that I think up in my living room. And that's what these guys are doing. And they give it a fancy name. And I don't know if you're dumb enough to buy this shit. I don't even have much sympathy, but in this case, it's not about that. It's about the stealing from other people.
And what's crazy is neither of these guys and the other people involved in this, like Yulia, and Mikhail Margulis is dead, but there was a couple other people on, you know, the documentation for this coin offering. Nobody's been indicted for this thing. Nobody's even talking about it except for me and a couple of guys who were like, hey, you need some help? You don't look like you know much about crypto. I'm like, yeah, I don't know shit. Oh. Tell you. You know, I just feel like it's a really important note. You know, I mean, that's a lot of money to seemingly just be gone. You know, with Belarus and I mean, what the fuck is all that? Why, first of all, where is Florida oversight? Hello? You know? So instead of cracking down on financial crimes, instead they're, you know, getting this Florida blockchain task force to pilot a program in Florida to, you know, implement blockchain for, I don't know, Joel Greenberg's office. Right.
It sounds.
I mean, so you've got the CFO Jimmy Patronis and Ron DeSantis, who were part of assigning directors to this Florida blockchain task force. You know, during this whole time, and you're telling me they fucking missed this? Give me a break.
All of this like sounds like something that Ron DeSantis would brag about to the high school girls at the parties he used to go to. You know, when he was their teacher. You know, you can see him like by the keg, like, let me tell you about this organic fresh, you know, you know about crypto. Let me know.
Yeah, you're going to have organic fresh food. Yeah, you're going to know who the farmer is.
It's going to be like organic. But
dope.
Put it on the blockchain. Everything will be cool.
Yeah.
I don't really think that. Well, I just wanted to bring it up because,
you
know, people should know that this motherfucker was at parties with high school girls when he was their teacher drinking. You know, I don't know.
For sure. I mean, he also hung out with Joel Greenberg and Matt Gaetz and Jason Pizzola and Teens for America First. I mean, that was his campaign stop tour.
Oh God.
You know, I mean, these guys are not, they're not far separated, you know, and Roger Stone is right up in that whole fucking thing. Such a political cockroach. The guy just can't be killed. He can't fly so well anymore, but he's still around just like, you know, creating havoc.
I think he gets the source of his power from the Nixon tattoo on his back. I think it has special magical properties. Yeah. Like it's like, if you get the Nixon tattoo, it'll be stupid, but you'll be given immortal life and da 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 da.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a Florida connection, I believe, also to this George Santos guy through this, what's her name? Nancy Marks. Did you find anything? Like, what's the connection with him? I don't know what to make of him. I'm still kind of gathering information, I guess. It's weird, this whole thing.
To me, he's just like a shittier version of Marjorie Taylor Greene, where like his whole goal is to distract the media, take them on a trip down crazy lane where all this other shit is going on, but they just can't focus on anything except for whatever this fucking guy Santos is doing. Look, I think it's important that he's a fucking liar and that we clearly have problems with voter recourse after the fact. Yeah. Or like, you know, nothing can be done all of a sudden because, you know, Kevin McCarthy needs his vote. I mean, he really was the deciding factor in Kevin McCarthy becoming Speaker of the House. So attribute it all to Kevin McCarthy and focus on that motherfucker. Stop focusing on these like shiny objects that are intentionally put there to have you chase them. You know, I think he's an operative. I think he is somebody who, again, is being used and exploited because he has no shame, no empathy, and no sense of, I don't know, right and wrong or hypocrisy. He doesn't give a shit. He's getting paid, and he's you know, there's people telling him he's great, right?
Yeah.
You know, so I think he's anyways, his treasurer, I suppose, on there's been a lot of digging into him, so I haven't really done a whole lot myself. I did look at a couple of different things just in campaign finance, because I just, names and addresses, I have this weird like photogenic memory where if I've seen it before, it's registered somewhere. So if I can look through his finances, I can maybe know instinctually who to, I should probably look at this company. I've maybe seen it before. And so that's what happened. And I noticed that his campaign treasurer is Nancy Marks, who's in New York, but she was the campaign treasurer for a spoiler candidate in Florida in a federal race for the House or Senate, CD 27, I think it was. And it was this woman, Marie Salazar.
That's the one that just vanished after, right? That like left the country and we never heard from her again?
No. This is a totally different one.
Oh, okay.
So this is what's interesting is because if everybody's noticed, like the Republicans have all of a sudden declared that they are like, you know, the party of Hispanics and Latino, and, you know, that they're going to be like out and recruiting all of these new, you know, Spanish speaking voters and things like that. And I think a lot of that is a manufactured bullshit. I think, you know, I mean, there were cases where Republican operatives were going down and changing the voter records of Spanish speaking apartment complexes in South Florida, where they were changing them from Democrat to Republican, and they spoke Spanish. They didn't even know that was happening till they went to vote.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, they were manipulating these people, you know, and who knows what else, but there's been a huge push to capitalize on you know, I think they're white, male dominant kind of makeup is of the country is getting smaller.
Yeah.
Right. So they have to go to the next kind of closest shade on like the scale. But you know, I hate to say, I probably sound horrible saying it, but it's the only way I can explain it if I'm thinking in their mind. Like their mind is like, who's the next, you know, we can't really take black people yet, right? We're gonna just go and try and find like maybe the Catholic or evangelical Hispanics that are more white passing that we can bring on into our fold so that we can maintain this white male dominated power.
Yeah.
And I think that that's their target right now is they, you know, have these Spanish speaking propaganda websites that Roger Stone is on in Florida. I mean, it's suspicious, but this woman who has the same treasurer as George Santos, who also Hispanic name, Spanish name, she's Salazar, right? And they both have the same like shady treasurer that oversees their campaign finance. You know, it looks to me, because even one of the other spoiler candidates in the original three or four from 2020 Florida was also Hispanic. She used to run Latinas for Trump. So this is not a coincidence that a lot of these, you know, shady things are with these kind of political operatives that represent, you know, specific demographic that the Republicans desperately need.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. All of it makes sense. So I was going to ask about Brazil while we're on the topic of, well, Brazil speaks Portuguese, but there's that too there. A lot of this stop the steal verbiage and misinformation was translated into different languages and just repurposed for Brazil. But let's talk about Mike Flynn, because we haven't mentioned him yet. And I know he's a big thing with you. And you know, he's clearly very dangerous. He's clearly right at the epicenter of not just J6, but all of the Trump fuckery from the get-go. He was the first real person to endorse him. He, for a brief time, I think people forget this, was going to be the vice president. I mean, they were talking about that. And I think they sort of figured out that if he was actually running, there would be too much heat on him and he wouldn't be able to sustain, to get through it and survive the op research and stuff like that. So that went away. You know, he was the national security advisor for however long he was there, despite being, you know, a guy who is carrying water for Putin, sitting next to him at dinner and, you know, getting all cozy with the head of the Russian intelligence outfits and trying to get them to come to the United States and this and that. And now on J6 of this year, January 6, 2023, that fuckhead Elon Musk put this asshole Mike Flynn back on Twitter, whereupon I discovered that, oh, yeah, that's right. He blocked me years ago.
Oh.
I was like, wow, I was going to say something to you, but...
Oh. But you poor thing.
Yeah.
You have the misfortune.
I know. And somebody told me, well, you know, these real operatives, they'll just block everybody. They're not going to... It's standard operating procedure. They just block anybody who might tweet anything at them that would cause them, you know, to think twice, which explains why WikiLeaks blocked me too, I suppose. So,
yeah,
you know, well, like real journalists,
similar crew.
Yeah. It's all the same. It's all the same people. But what's your take now, like on Flynn, apropos the executive order 13, what is it?
848. Yeah.
And, all this stuff we know about, he was pretty instrumental in everything to do with the insurrection, as far as I can see. And yet
we're not
indicting him. J6 committee isn't talking about him and he's just there stirring up shit. So what's your take on him now?
I think that he is the leader of American ISIS.
Yeah.
He's incredibly dangerous. He is not loyal to the United States of America. He has weaponized the tools and the training that the military provided to him against the American people. And whether it was you know, mind fucked by, you know, visiting, you know, the FSB or the GR, whatever he did back in the day. You got to visit and see their operations, you know, whether he was mind fucked by that and he doesn't recognize, I mean, I can't imagine he doesn't, or, you know, if he's willfully just doing this for power or profit or whatever it is, it doesn't really fucking matter. What matters is that he is a national security threat and an imminent danger. I mean, he has recently, I bought this book. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say I'm going to do this, you know, opposition research. I want to understand what the people who are, who see him as their leader, as their general in the holy war that he is waging, what he is telling them. And he has a book called, it's like a 5GW manual. So fifth generation warfare manual. And it's this like little pocket kind of, well, it's not a pocket, but it's a book. And it has these these things that he calls diagrams. They're not fucking diagrams, just like boxes with words in them. It's not even necessary. But one of which is how to get people to kill people. That's one of the chapters. Yeah. Is explaining the process of inserting disinformation using PSYOPs and PSYACs, which PSYACT is a psychological action that creates a psychological response to an event that you physically see that that assists the PSYOP in its goals. I mean, he spells it all out here about it's total projection, obviously, but he has since now just kind of landed on everybody, all of his people need to read this book so they know how to wage war against the deep state. This thing is like the Turner Diaries on steroids with instructions. It is so terrifying, and nobody has talked about this book. I've read it. It's scary. I mean, what he is teaching people in this book is how to manipulate your neighbors, how to spread disinformation, how to dehumanize people, how to create in-groups and out-groups, and how to insert violence through PSYACs to reach your goal, which is political violence. He's dangerous. He has, you know, radicalized a lot of people that are still in the military, or at least in proximity to power in a lot of ways, or at least with, let's say, just a lot of military background and training. You'll notice that a lot of the people that were involved in January 6th happen to have been at the DIA around the time that Mike Flynn was there, you know, or were in, you know, the National Guard afterwards in psychological operation squadrons or groups. A lot of these fucking people are psychological warfare officers trained to disrupt the thought process of the average American. Well, it's not supposed to be American. Other countries, right, to overthrow dictators and shit. But they're using it here against Americans to overthrow real and free and fair democracy.
It's terrifying.
You know, that's fucking dangerous.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It really is.
Yeah.
I feel like I listened to the podcast where Jill Wine Banks and Victor Shi interview Chris Miller, and just listening to that guy talk, I know you listen to these guys a lot talking. I don't like to do that if I can help it, but there's this arrogance about them, and this kind of, you can tell after just listening to them for a few minutes that they're not dumb, but they're not as smart as they think they are.
Yeah.
And they lack the ability to admit that they were wrong and learn from their mistakes. It feels like they're constantly, I'm right, when they're wrong. And then it's veered them down this path towards everybody's against me and they're all the deep state, when it's really just, no, you're just fucking wrong. You were wrong about things. You were wrong.
You fucked up.
You were wrong that the Islamic terrorists were worse than the transnational organized crime in Russia. You were wrong about that. Mm-hmm. You thought you were right and you were wrong. You know, plenty of people were wrong about it. There's shame in it, but sure. Admit it and learn sure. from it. Don't double down. Certainly not now. And as for Mike Flynn himself and his motivations, I can't speak to that either, but the guy was in jail in high school, and I know why, and I'm not going to say, but it wasn't something that
ding, 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 ding,
it wasn't something that, that, that I would do or you would do. It's something that a criminal mind would do. And,
right.
You know, and that's it. And when you start off like that, when you're 17 years old, is that a youthful error or is that just the way you're wired? And I think that it's the way this guy is wired. He doesn't see right and wrong the way most people do. And until he's indicted and sent to prison, he's just going to keep doing this stuff. He's never going to stop because that's just who he is.
He sees right and wrong as a challenge.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If he wanted to know if he did that, could he get away with it?
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily that he wanted something or, you know, that he needed it or anything else. It was like, it's testing those limits of his ability to be deceptive.
Yeah.
You know,
do the rules apply to me? All of it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It's very dangerous. I do not understand. I mean, we're now, my God, it's 2023 now. We're 7 years, you know, and these people are still running around. And I know that, you know, Mueller did convict them and they, you know, the pardons did happen. It's not like we didn't try to get them, but it's mind boggling to me that these people are still these people, meaning Stone, Flynn, you know, Bannon.
Mm-hmm.
Bannon was convicted. He's still not in jail. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, people.
Right. And he's helping Bolsonaro, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a big difference between what Bolsonaro did and what Trump did, right? And that is that Bolsonaro did not speak publicly about the election results. And that was a lesson that Bannon and his operatives like Matthew Tiermand and others, Jason Miller and the other guys, they learned is that Trump didn't shut the fuck up, which provided people to be prepared in advance of their moves and to try and anticipate their moves. That's the difference, is they told Bolsonaro to shut the fuck up.
And he was smart enough to do it. You know.
And he didn't go out and like say, that way they can't, you know, they're trying to also create that plausible deniability that he had nothing to do, you know, with January 8th and all those people with the,
I was in Publix buying avocado. How could I be, you know,
I'm just in Florida on vacation. Whatever. Yeah. Mind you, that guy was convicted of crimes against humanity for all the COVID deaths in Brazil. Like, I mean, he was charged with that shit.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, but yeah, these people are just incredibly dangerous, and we're not creating deterrence. We're just not, you know? And so everybody who has, you know, grief, upset with Garland, I get it. You know, I mean, there are some people, I understand, if you have a complicated conspiracy case and you have to chase down this or have a monumental amount of evidence against, you know, a political figure, whatever, okay, whatever. But we have pardons that should be challenged,
Ridiculous.
Of people that clearly were traded pardons for a facilitation of an attempted coup. You know, it's not fucking hard to figure out, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think that sitting back and just hoping this goes away is careless, destructive, and it will be our demise if we don't get our shit together. And we just have to I hate it, but we have to round these fucking people up, and we have to make an example out of them. Because if you don't punish a coup, then, or an attempted coup, you get a fucking successful coup.
Yeah. And to your point about, you know, Trump talking too much about it beforehand, who won't talk about it is DeSantis. He won't make the same mistake.
That's right.
He is disciplined enough to do the things that he needs to do to get to power. And, you know, and he would be a good little fascist leader. He's boring as fuck. He's short. All he cares about is the stuff. He's got the ridiculous wife. I mean, it's the whole package is there. And
he hates himself. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, all of it. Small hands.
Yeah.
It's all there.
Totally.
Okay. I
weird white boots, you know, go-go dancer boots.
He wants to be a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader, clearly. Yes. Yeah. And he's got the Abu Ghraib thing in his background too, because the Jag and that kind of stuff. So he's, you know.
I think he knows Jack Posobiec from that time.
Mm, interesting.
Just in case that helps anybody connect those dots.
Okay. But, yeah. Speaking of people who have me blocked, Jack Posobiec blocked me a long time ago.
That's too funny. Well, I got to tell you one quick thing, and I know we're probably running out of time here, and we could probably go on forever, but. One quick note for you is, remember, I think I told you at one point that the January 6th investigation and the Joel Greenberg investigation was going to collide.
You did,
right?
Yep, you said it.
I did. Well, it has.
Okay.
Officially, you know. So the Proud Boys had a document called the 1776 Returns. It was like a 7 or 8 page document. I think you, me, and LB talked about it a couple times.
Yeah.
About their positioning and surrounding buildings and a bunch of
50 people
like,
tops.
Make sure you read the instructions first. Like on the front. Guess who wrote that?
You told me, and I should know this, but I'm going to blame it on my COVID brain that I don't know. DeSantis's kid. I don't know who.
No, maybe he's a love child. Good question. No, Samuel Armes or Arms. I'm not sure how to say his name, his last name. Armes. He was the blockchain legislative advisor for Joel Greenberg, paid for by the taxpayers of Seminole County, Florida, who helped create the blockchain task force in the state of Florida. He was friends with Enrique Tarrio's kind of semi-girlfriend, Erica Flores, who was known as like the crypto Miami queen or some bullshit. And he claims that he wrote this document because he learned while he was being groomed for the CIA and the FBI.
Okay.
Right. Because he's such a smart turd. You know, he's just one of those techno bros, right? He always says, right. Like, anyways, but he wrote this document, he claims, in anticipation of potential chaos because of the 2020 summer violence. And also because he was inspired to write it because of the Terri Schiavo case.
What? What does that have to do with the price?
He's like 24. Was he even alive when that shit happened? I don't know. But so he wrote this document. He claims was just he was just putting his thoughts on paper and kind of wargaming, you know, because he just wasn't, you know, sometimes he does that. Well, have you ever written any of these before? Well, no, I just did it for this one. But, you know, all my friends will tell you I just say these things, like kind of thing. But anyways, so he worked for Joel Greenberg. He's the person who put in place the Florida Blockchain Business Association, that all of these guys, these crypto guys, Ron Paul, all these fucking, you know, Oath Keeper adjacent, decentralized anti-government fucks, all, you know, congregate in Florida around this. This guy worked for Joel Greenberg, and he was his transcript is in the Jan 6 committee, that he is the original author of the 1776 returns document that the Enrique Tarrio and the Proud Boys had.
Okay.
I mean, that's,
I feel like there's going to be more connections as we move along. I don't think this is the first and only intersection of these two investigations. I think there's going to be more.
I agree.
Yeah.
This is a big one, though. It's a really big one. That document is being used right now in their sedition case, you know, or seditious conspiracy case. So I will tell you that during his transcript interview, he got a Charlie horse. I'm not kidding. And his lawyer and the people interview, I mean, it's so fucking funny. You see it transcribed. She's typing it out. And his lawyer is like, are you okay? Oh, are you okay? And he's like, yeah. Oh, Charlie horse. Oh my gosh. You know? And she goes, oh my God. His lawyer goes, oh my God, he's on the floor. It's typed out. It's typed out in the thing. And they're like, do you need a minute? And he's like, I'm good. I'm good. I just did a personal best. It was like 425 squats or some shit. Like, such a douche answer.
Oh my God.
Oh, and they kept trying to give him a break. And he's like, he's doing that like, oh, no, I'm going to push through it. I can answer these questions while I have a Charlie horse.
I don't think I've heard the word Charlie horse since I was like in third grade, by the way. I think that's a, you know, is it too unmanly to say cramp? No, we can't do that.
Well, I mean, look, he was being groomed, which his words, not mine, for the CIA and the FBI and the intel community.
Both the CIA and the FBI. Wow.
All of it.
He's going to work for both of them at the same time. Wow.
All of them.
It's amazing.
He's a super spy.
Yeah. I get, you know.
But the best part is his attorney. He's on the floor.
When they go low.
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap up with this because I can't have you on and not ask about Ginny Thomas and her ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
So I know you wrote a whole thing about this, about her transcript, which I haven't had time to read in full. I heard LB's dramatic reading of it on Friday and stuff. But what is this 79 days thing? And broadly, what's your take on Ginny Thomas with this? What do you think is going to happen to her? Is she really involved with it as much as we think, or is it more ideological and she just thinks these guys are great, but she didn't actually do anything illegal?
I think I actually think Ginny Thomas is the tip of the spear.
Okay,
I do. She has led a, you know, what she even calls a 30-front war against, you know, democracy, essentially, for decades. But in particular, you asked about the 79 days project. That was a war game. So it was a much more advanced version of Charlie Horse, Samuel Arms' 1776 project plan, right? It was a much more strategic, advanced, written document about essentially the 79 days till inauguration.
Okay.
I think the significance of that. So it was written, it was distributed, written and teamed by the Texas Public Policy Foundation, which is a, you know, a Koch network funded kind of think tank institute of mass destruction, what I call them, and the Claremont Institute. Now the Claremont Institute is where we got John Eastman. Mm. They also have had Ron DeSantis and Jack Posobiec, and a lot of these people we've been already talking about have been part of that think tank out in California. But essentially, what in her testimony, she talks about, or they're asking her about whether or not, you know, they had this plan of this alternate electors, and there were emails circulating about the 79 days project as early as November 5th. And Ginny was involved in all of it. She coordinated for John Eastman and others to present the 79 days project to groups so that they understood. And, you know, she played really fucking dumb. First of all, she didn't have to swear in, mm-hmm. however that happens, so she can lie her face off, which is exactly what she did. She claims that she really, you know, she really liked this project, this plan that they had listed in there. She tried to claim that it was their response to what the Democrats might do if the Democrats lost, which is total bullshit. You'll have to go and read this one section or do a little commercial or one of your really cool like, songs or something or whatever you do, because there's this one section where the exact plan that they executed on January 6th was in this, which was they wanted one vote for one, you know, each representative or whatever, and the Senate would pick the vice president and the House would pick the president. Well, in their war game scenario, Antifa, you know, mm-hmm. Antifa came and fucked it all up and injured all these Congress people, and they da-da-da-da-da. Well, one of the Congress people, right, they were so close on those votes for president, they needed one more vote, and there was a critically injured congressman that said, turn me around in the ambulance. And like, you know, they turned around and he was on blood transfusions and and IVs, and he came in this valor moment to cast the deciding ballot for, I mean, it was just so, it was like a 12-year-old boy wrote it after watching Mortal Kombat, you know? It was just like, what the fuck is this? And Ginny Thomas in her transcript is like, well, I thought it was a quite reasonable and, you know, executable plan. I thought it was really well done. Lady, are you serious? Come on now.
She's just,
I mean,
crazy Facebook lady, yeah. You know, and I she literally from what I've heard does post crazy shit on Facebook, or did, you know, she is my crazy MAGA aunt, you know, but she happens to be married to this guy who's one of the nine, and there's only nine, you know, Supreme Court justices who are basically taking a fucking battle axe to our freedoms.
He needs to be removed.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, yeah. I mean, he's got to go. I mean, he can't even, it's not a, I'm so tired of hearing he needs to recuse himself. Like, no, listen, he got to go.
Yeah.
Like there has to be consequences, and I'm not, you know, it's not because I mean, you know, not animosity towards any particular person. It's literally as a deterrent to prevent other people from thinking that once they're in a position of power, they can wield it in whatever way benefits them and their friends. Like, deterrence is a bigger deal sometimes than, you know, individual consequences.
Yeah, no, I think I you know, I couldn't agree more. And I've been yelling about this in my way for years now. I mean, you know, not that I want to anybody to whatever, but like, if you execute the people that do the coup, then they're not allowed, they're not alive to do treason again. I mean, I'm not, you know, if right. Like in any other society, in any other time in human history, if there's a coup like that and they round up the leaders, they don't just do nothing because they're in Congress. They execute them, you know? That's what happens.
Oh, yeah.
It's always what happens.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen here. And we're supposed to be an enlightened country and blah, blah, blah. Even though we execute people in this country all the time. It's not going to happen. And instead, we're just going to do nothing because, you know, it's Matt Gaetz's father and Matt Gaetz, and it's, you know, the wife of the Supreme Court justice and da, 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 da. But yes, I think that we do have to deter these people. Deterrence, I don't think works. Like if you say, I'm going to, this is a drug dealer, and therefore we're going to give him the death penalty instead of putting him in prison, I don't think that deterrence works. I don't think other drug dealers are like, I was going to do this major drug operation, but I don't know, they killed Bobby, I better not. Like, I don't think it works for that, but I do think it works for treason. I do think it would cause these fuckers on Capitol Hill to think twice before they do shit like this anymore.
Yeah, but I also think deterrence works for privileged motherfuckers.
Yes.
Okay. So people who deal drugs or whatever because they're you know, they're surviving, like, because they have to make money and shit or whatever it is. That's a different level of risk assessment that they take,
right?
Understanding that they are doing something wrong.
Yes.
So when you have deterrence for these fucking, you know, prissy, pussy little white boys who went to prep schools, who went to the best fucking college, who were given scholarships, even though they're stupid, right? I mean, I just think deterrence works because they are terrified of being irrelevant. They are terrified of not providing a legacy. They are terrified of prison.
Yes.
Terrified.
Yes.
So put their ass in prison, because I promise you, the next little white boy at the prep school that, you know, that sees that their, you know, older brother or their, you know, uncle or whatever is in fucking prison, they are not going to grow up and be like, I'm going to try and finish what he started. No, they're gonna go and like stay in line and get the wife and do the thing, and they're not gonna try another coup. Not like that. So deterrence works for those preppy little pussy bitches that don't want to go to prison, and that, you know, they're not, it's not because they're trying to survive that they're doing these things.
Yeah,
it's because they just think that they should be able to,
because the rules don't apply to them,
you know?
Yeah.
Yes. So make the rules apply to them, you know?
Yeah. or at least the big rules.
I don't know. Give it a shot. Let's try.
Yeah, let's just try.
Let's see what happens.
We don't even need it to be all the rules. Just maybe draw the line at trying to overthrow the government. Maybe just there.
Yeah.
Even there, you know, it's fine. I and I think you're right. They are terrified of prison, and they should be terrified of prison, because that's the one thing. Taking their freedom away is really the one thing that, you know, I've maintained. I think Trump wanted a pardon. I think he's afraid of prison. And I think the whole business of J6 wasn't to keep him in power as much as it was to keep him out of prison, which is what he fears.
I agree.
You know, and again, the way to make this shit stop: indictments, convictions, long jail sentences. That's it. That's what we need to have happen. Yeah. So,
Justice delayed is justice denied, because the longer that it is delayed, the longer they have to cover their tracks and gain support for, you know, or when justice may come knocking. So.
And concoct escape plans for when they all wind up in the UAE a year from now. You know, they're just hanging out there in some country we don't have extradition treaty with. It's just...
Well, Taiwan, we don't. So it's interesting that they're so focused on that.
Okay. Interesting.
But also, you know, DeSantisdan is probably a good option as well.
I had postulated getting rid of Texas and just in one of the episodes, just saying, hey, the treaty in which Texas was annexed by the United States, as it turns out, it was unconstitutional. So bye. That would solve so many problems. Like, people would be like, there's a problem with the border. Well, it's not our problem anymore, is it?
So, sounds like to Texas's problem.
Sounds like it to me. So, and maybe the same thing would be true of Florida. But again, I guess we have to, like, Disney would be just like West Berlin, and we would have to, you know, fly in.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, people to do the rides and stuff. But I don't know. But he wants Disney gone too. This whole thing is so weird. It seems like
so woke.
Doing battle with Disney in Florida seems like kind of not a good idea to me, but what do I know? I don't know. I'm not trying to organize a fascist overthrow. So, you know, I've got better things to do with my time.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. So this was great. It's always nice to see you. We can follow you on Twitter for as long as it lasts at, it's just _ Gal Suburban. Is there an underscore in there?
It's Gal.
_ Suburban. You have a Substack now. Which is called, just Mindfuck? I forget, because you changed it, I think. Didn't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not great at it. I'm worse. I'm still in the, you know, Greg is helping provide me some good information.
You should do your daily dose, like, on Substack every day, and just do what Heather Cox Richardson does, but, you know, with the Gal flavor. And I think people would like that. And it would be a good resource and worth your time. So I would encourage you to, as I have, but I'm going to do it now publicly so people can hear. I would encourage you to do that. Okay. So that's how we can find you. Your puppies have been very, very well behaved, much better behaved than your rooster. But I think he just wanted to express his admiration for DeSantis and for Kevin McCarthy. The rooster just wanted to, you know, chime in.
Bunch of cocks.
Yeah. You know. That's it. We'll end there. Gal, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Greg.
The Prevail theme song is by Matthew Fawcett. Zarina Zabriskie, Marie Kost, and Martha Acuna provided the introduction in Ukrainian, French, and Spanish, respectively. Voice talent is by Stephanie St. John, Tally Briggs, Michelle Cantor, and me. Thanks to Allison Gill, Molly Hawkey, Kanai Williams, and everyone else at MSW Media. Please subscribe to the Prevail Substack with updates every Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday. Your $5 monthly subscription funds the column and the podcast. Visit gregoliar.com to learn more. Thanks for listening. Drive safely. Don't forget to tip your server. And until next time, we shall prevail.
I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay?
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.